Afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Committee on Alaska's Economy. Today is Thursday, January 26th, and with me this afternoon is Senator Hughes, our Vice Chair, welcome. Senator Meyer, welcome, and Senator Gardner, welcome, and Senator Stevens is excused from today's meeting. I also wanted to thank our recording secretary, Matt, and the LIO operator, Carrie. Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. And the time, we started at about 1:30. So as you know, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has been shining a bright light on Alaska's economy. We started out the session with 6 hours of hearings the first week on our economic status of this, you know, situation with the recession that we're experiencing. And so we've gotten a lot of great feedback from those hearings. And earlier this week, we heard from three industries that are thriving in the recession environment: the tourism industry, air cargo, and then also the healthcare industry. So we will be continuing our focus on the economy today by looking at the regional economic development plans. And so we have a huge slate of really great Alaskans who are here to present. And first off, and I'm going to go ahead and read through the list, and then each of our presenters has been asked to present for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then we'll take questions after each presenter. So we will be beginning this afternoon by hearing from the President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, Bill Popp. He's online, and welcome, Bill. Next, we will be hearing from Tim Dillon, the Executive Director of the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. Then we will be hearing from Shelley Wright, the Executive Director of the Southeast Conference. Melanie Shivens is here, welcome. She's the Economic Development Planner for the Southeast Conference, and also Robert Venables, the Energy Coordinator for the Southeast Conference. And then finally, the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Chris Fladek, is here, and Brittany Siani Hayward, the Division Director for Economic Development. So the question that we would like members to consider as we hear from our presenters, in addition to the questions that you may have, we're asking the question, should the state have an economic development strategy, a strategic vision for moving our economic diversification forward and helping with our economy, looking at perhaps best practices and opportunities, with an eye also to a resilience in our economy during this time of recession. So with that, I would like to personally welcome Bill Popp, who is again online. He's the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation head. And Bill, please feel free to start your presentation.
Senator Costello and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share AEDC's perspectives on community and economic development strategies. I want to just blitz through a whole bunch of different things in my allotted time, so please bear with me if I move right along. AEDC's mission is to grow a prosperous, sustainable, and diverse Anchorage economy, and our vision is that Anchorage will be the number one city in America to live, work, and play by 2025. That is not a marketing slogan. That is not a branding effort. We don't talk about it outside of Anchorage. That is our focus on our community, and we only talk about it to the community. And while AEDC is focused on Anchorage, we do believe that all communities are in this together. What is good for other Alaska communities, or inversely, what is bad for other Alaska communities, is generally either good or bad for the Anchorage economy, depending on what the conditions are. There's just not enough of us to resort to parochialism. We face a lot of challenges in our efforts in Anchorage. For example, according to the just-released 2016 Cost of Living Index, Anchorage is now the 20th most expensive city at 130.2% of national average in the survey, the Cost of Living Index survey, out of 264 participating communities that represent all 50 states and the District of Columbia, small, medium, and large communities. A little context, Fairbanks is the 19th most expensive, Juneau is the 21st, and Kodiak is the 17th. Those are the four communities in Alaska that participate in this survey. A little granularity on this, Anchorage is the sixth highest city for groceries at 132.4% of national average. Anchorage is the 20th most expensive city for housing at 149.9% of the national average. Anchorage is the 112th ranked city for utilities, and we are dead on with the national average at 100.1%. Anchorage is the 36th highest city for transportation, which is two-thirds of that is the cost of vehicle transportation, gasoline pretty much, at 112.9%. And Anchorage remains the third most expensive city for health care in this national survey at 143.5% of the national average. And finally, Anchorage is the fifth most expensive city for miscellaneous goods and services at 125.8% of national average. And just to give you a perspective on that, Anchorage is the seventh most expensive city in the United States to buy a Big Mac at an average of $4.88. So that just kind of gives you a sense of the uphill fight that we have in attracting new investment from outside of our community and our state. So we offer a lot of slate of services to businesses and growth-focused programs that include research and analysis reports and tools, national and international business attraction efforts, trying to attract investment from outside of the state, which is a very tough proposition, assistance to new and existing businesses seeking to invest in Anchorage, that includes local businesses that are already here as well as new startups, support for entrepreneurship and related programs and initiatives like the 49th State Angel Fund, which we are a strong partner with the municipality of Anchorage in. The strategic efforts of AEDC are now focused in three key areas: our Live-Work-Play initiative, our comprehensive economic development strategy that we are partnering with the municipality of Anchorage on, and our airport business development initiative. I'll go over those very quickly. Live Work Play is our community redevelopment initiative focused on shoring up and strengthening the foundational elements of the community. If these particular aspects of the community are in poor repair, are underperforming, or are creating conditions that make Anchorage less attractive, it is undermining any efforts that we try to make in terms of economic development. And our board of directors adopted this vision of making Anchorage the number one city in America a little over six years ago now. And we are focusing on things like safety, housing, education, arts, recreation, the health of the community, the diversity of our community. And this effort has gathered over 200 direct volunteers and nearly 200 businesses and organizations that are partnering with us to try and build up and strengthen these foundational elements that will make successful economic development more possible. Our next initiative, which is led by a community steering committee, is the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, and this is how we will take advantage of improved community foundations. This strategy, focused on economic development initiatives, is set for completion later this fall. It's a grassroots planning process that gathers a broad set of perspectives from citizens and the business community. And we already have over 600 public comments in the first 3 weeks of the survey that we've extended through the end of February based on the surge of response that we got. It will lay down a five-year plan for a set of initiatives that could include things like we've been seeing a lot of interest in downtown revitalization, and that effort is of particular interest to us given the many examples that we've seen elsewhere in the country, like Cleveland or Oklahoma City or Wichita or Cincinnati, or name any other number of cities that have used downtown revitalization as a way to revitalize the entire community. Because when you have a strong and vibrant downtown, the rest of the community benefits in housing and collateral developments because it's a more attractive city that the workforce wants to reside in. Another potential partnership opportunity may be a UMed Innovation District, taking advantage of the strengths of our center of competencies of healthcare and the university and the innovations that are being developed within the university, but that could be perhaps facilitated more to turn those innovations into honest-to-God businesses that are creating jobs and investment. And there's a lot of strong interest within the city as well as the public at large at the idea of an innovation district in and around UMed. There are probably going to be other things that we're going to be looking at. The plan is nowhere near final. Neither of those two initiatives are official or anything that I can say are going to happen, but they seem to be rising to the top in the initial rounds of comments that we received. We're going to continue to work on the feds for Anchorage. We're going to definitely rename it because we need something a little more engaging to the community in terms of a name, but it's an important planning process that we think is going to dovetail nicely with the Live Work Play initiative. Our airport business development effort is now entering its fourth year. We've just completed our third year of significant effort on this. The first 18 months, well, first of all, as you well know, the airport is a crown jewel in the state's overall economy. Last year, it was the fourth busiest cargo airport on the planet in terms of tonnage transiting through the airport. Over 85% of the goods entering North America from Asia by air cargo lands at Anchorage International Airport first before going on to its final destination. And over 65% of the air cargo leaving the United States for Asia lands at Anchorage International Airport on its way to its final destination in dozens of countries across Asia. With over 500 wide-body jets a week landing at Anchorage International Airport, it has a tremendous set of opportunities, but they are very complex, and it is a lot of work to identify which ones seem to have the most merit. We spent 18 months focused on researching global supply chains with the help of a consultancy and funding from the airport to identify possible industries that could benefit from locating aspects of their operations in Anchorage. And the four industries that rose to the top were pharmaceuticals, with a particular focus on clinical trials. Automotive electronics, it was a distant second, and a very distant third and fourth was consumer electronics and aviation parts. There are niche aspects of those other three that seem to be very interesting, but are going to be very challenging to develop. Pharmaceuticals seems to have risen to the top as our most likely opportunity, and that is the one that we are focusing on first. But we are doing work on the other three, just not as a center of our focus at this point in time. So the last 18 months have been focused on analyzing the specific target industry needs and expectations, like workforce, availability and cost of utilities, availability and cost of facilities, and any number of other things that they would plug in to their pro forma to decide if a location is competitive or not and meets their expectations. We've been working to align public and private partnerships like the Alaska Aeronexus Alliance, a partnership between the Alaska International Airport System, AEDC, and the municipality of Anchorage, that aligns the purposes of those three organizations more closely to give a strong sense of support for any business that is looking to take advantage of what we are going to be proposing. We are diving deeper into industry cost trends and comparing those to costs in Anchorage to build a business case or to identify the fact that there is no business case. We are pushing things off the table at the same time that we are trying to develop things further that seem to have some opportunities. And efforts are going to continue through 2017 with a reassessment of the efforts before continuing into 2018 and beyond at the end of the year. Wins will likely, if we are successful, be small facilities, 15 to 25,000 square feet or less, with 10 to maybe 20, 25 employees per facility. It's a long-term project with the hope that we will plant the seeds of larger growth that will take place 5 to 10 years in the future as the industries are either successful or less than successful. It's a long-term play. In closing, I want to just give a quick recap of what AEDC is. We are entering our 30th anniversary year. We will celebrate our anniversary in July. It is a 10-person organization with a 65-member board of voting and non-voting members. Our 2017 budget is estimated at $1.8 million cash and in-kind, and direct government funding is just approximately $250,000 solely from the municipality of Anchorage. That equals approximately 14% of our total budget, with the rest being private sector sourced, either through memberships, earned income, or sponsorships of different things that we do. So I want to leave with these closing thoughts. There are no easy wins in either economic or community development. This is a hard, long slog. And investments in both efforts are critical. One will not be successful if the other is underperforming or failing. We are not going to be successful as a community trying to develop economically if our citizens don't feel safe, if they are not healthy, if we don't have good schools, if we don't have good infrastructure. So community development must go hand in hand with any kind of economic development strategies from our point of view that we are developing for the city. top-down initiatives rarely work. We have example after example, both within Alaska and across the country, where ivory tower projects do not work. You need to have the buy-in of the business community, and you need to have the buy-in of the public on the initiatives related to both community and economic development. You have to give them a voice and leadership in the process. I think the simplest way to think about it is in this term. Think of it as a private-public partnership as opposed to a public-private partnership. It's critical to have the buy-in of the business community. Otherwise, you are not going to succeed. So with that, I'll stop there. That's the basis of what we're doing. That's a very, very shallow dive into the many things that AEDC is working on. And Madam Chair, I would end my testimony there.
Thank you very much, and we certainly appreciate the work that you've done at AEDC, Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, and like to open it up for questions from the committee. Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Bill Popp. Very informative. I appreciate all the work economic development. I share that passion with the chair. Appreciate your work. Two questions. First of all, this is kind of going outside of Anchorage, but since you did mention the other cities, 145% national average health care. Do Fairbanks, Kodiak, and was Juneau the other one, that are they higher than that, was my one question. And then also, why did pharmaceuticals rise to the top in the study as far as possible industry wanting to relocate to Anchorage?
Okay. In regards to the first question, if I'm remembering the numbers correctly, Fairbanks is now the number one most expensive city in the United States in the survey for health care. Juneau is second. They traded places. And then Kodiak is fourth for the cost of health care. The next closest city in the I haven't had a chance to dive into the data enough yet, but in the 2015 analysis, you know, here we are, this dramatically much more expensive than the rest of the country. The next closest city that we could find was Boston at 20% above the national average. And then most of the higher cost communities were in the 10 to mid to high teens above national cost of average. So above the national average for the cost of health care. So as you can see, this is it's a fairly substantial problem for us in terms of workforce attraction, retention, and in particular, it contributes to our lack of competitiveness in attracting outside business investment in the state. So it's about 10%, accounts for about 10% of the overall cost of living index matrix. Housing is a third, miscellaneous goods and services is another third, and then the other factors that I noted out make up the remaining minority difference. Why are pharmaceuticals a target for us? Well, we particularly drilled down when we identified the issue of, or the opportunity of clinical trials. Approximately 25 to 30% of the cost of developing any new drug comes from the cost of doing clinical trials to prove up the safety and quality and effectiveness of new drugs. Most United States pharmaceutical companies are trying to develop their new drugs for distribution around the world. There was a time when they would only focus on the United States markets, but now they are looking more globally. The FDA has rules in place that states that if you are going to perform a clinical trial of a U.S. drug in a foreign country, you must use U.S.-sourced materials from the equipment to the different types of things that are used in the clinical trial itself to, test the drugs, gather the data, et cetera. So you can't use foreign products in that process. Well, that puts Alaska in a very interesting position because some of the organic products, the chemical products, are very sensitive to temperature deviations, environmental conditions. And so if they can be based here in the United States in Anchorage, they can be distributed to major marketplaces for the clinical trials in a number of Asian countries in one airplane hop. And that's a major risk reduction. And we've tested that theory with a number of different companies who are involved in clinical trials to ask them if that was important to them. And that really got their attention. Now, there are a lot of other things that go with this, and we have by no means proven that this is a slam dunk opportunity. But it's a great first indicator that we've got something to work with here if we can just sort out the other things related to the cost of doing business here and how it could potentially make their supply chains more efficient having to source them from the United States.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Mr. Pop, this is Senator Costello, and I was curious, you know, the rest of the day we'll be hearing from other ARDRs and regional economic development organizations, and I was curious if you could comment on the relationship between Anchorage's economy and the rest of the state. We've had economists come before us this previous week telling us that they're all agreeing that we're experiencing a recession. And in one case, we had an economist share with us a map of the state of Alaska that showed job growth, and it was surprising to me because depending on what part of the state you're looking at, the job growth is quite different. And so I was curious, in terms of your work at Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, what relationship do you see to the rest of the state?
Well, we think that it's symbiotic. If Fairbanks' economy is going through tough times, we see less goods coming through the Port of Anchorage. We see less professional services being sold by our businesses to projects and needs in the Fairbanks area. And the same can be said for pretty much any other community across most of the state. The likely exceptions to that would be down in Southeast and perhaps out in the Aleutian Chain, where transportation legs may be, from a surface point of view, may be more readily serviced from our warehouse district in Tacoma, Seattle. That's a bit of a levity point there. We don't take it for granted that Anchorage is going to be able to sail through without impacts if other parts of the state are taking the hits. So when you look at the numbers that are coming out of last year, and a lot of it's still preliminary estimates for the last half of the year, but what we do see is, from our point of view, and we're going to be talking about this next week at our luncheon event on Wednesday, is that there's a bit of a bubble that just kind of burst, mainly in Anchorage, in terms of the economy, and that was the professional and business services bubble. We watched a very significant ramp up of spending by the state of Alaska through its capital budget process, beginning back in the earlier part of this decade, 2010-2011 timeframe, when tax policy was adjusted, when price of a barrel of oil was really moving up, and we saw billions and billions of dollars hit the economy in project-oriented spending. And that created a fairly significant ramp up in the professional and business services sector, mainly here in Anchorage. And so if you see a disparity in job losses and job growth, we look at it from that perspective that two-thirds of our job losses last year in 2016, based on the preliminary numbers, were centered mainly in the professional and business services sector, about 1,600 jobs lost in that sector, and then another 900 jobs lost in construction in Anchorage based on projects wrapping up and the lack of capital budgets over the last couple of years. So we went from go, go, go to absolute stop in terms of state capital dollars, and this is a cause and effect. So that's one of the things that we've been observing in the data that I think, kind of talks to the disparities. If you're seeing, I haven't seen the map that you're speaking of, but I can pretty much guess that Anchorage has been a fairly significant center of overall job losses in terms of a single community in the state. That and, we've got the largest concentration of jobs, so you likely lose a larger number here.
Thank you. Yes, the majority of the job loss has been in the private sector, mainly oil and gas and construction, and now, as you said, we'll be seeing other sectors. The Mat-Su Valley has seen an increase in jobs, and you had mentioned other parts of the state. Was curious, the East and West Aleutians boroughs, they're seeing job growth and job loss, and so it's very interesting the connection around the state. I know one thing that the legislature has always been interested in knowing is of the capital budget dollars that are out on the street, how much of that is still out there? Because I know there's a five-year a window for the money to be spent. And I know in my district, money that I was able to secure as a freshman in the House, we finally saw this last summer the project actually being constructed. So that's information I think that's very helpful, because I think as we go into another year with really no capital budget, we're going to see an even sharper impact, you know, on the economies. Mm-hmm. And that's what
Senator, I would observe that we have seen professional and business services in Anchorage was a 1,600 job loss. Construction was a 900 job loss in terms of direct local jobs where the work is being done here. And then 700 job loss, mainly due to the Shell downsizing of 400 jobs in the oil and gas sector that are positions that were held here in Anchorage. We're still trying to sort out the reality of the numbers in terms of the losses on the North Slope, because we know that there's a fairly significant percentage of that workforce that is non-resident, 25 to 30%, depending on whose estimate that you look at. And we don't have great clarity yet as to how many of those job losses were non-resident jobs or employees. We are anecdotally starting to observe, in terms of the way the population numbers that were just disseminated, there appears to be two things. We think that there was an impact to non-resident workforce in Anchorage, because we haven't seen a significant spike in first-time unemployment. The housing market remains really healthy. And we've also seen a net migration to, which we believe we contributed quite a bit to, into the Matanuska-Susitna borough due to the, as I mentioned in the cost of living index, our very high cost and lack of availability of affordable housing in Anchorage, which is an issue that we are trying to address through policy changes within the municipality and to a lesser degree at statewide level. So there's a lot of moving parts and pieces that affect these different numbers and have causalities. You know, for Anchorage, our biggest job losses by far in direct job losses are in the professional and business services sector. Although we are, just as a little hint to our forecast next week, going to see a significant softening in that particular category in terms of the losses next year.
Thank you. And my comments were really summing up what we had heard from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development when Dan Robinson was here. So I appreciate your clarification. And we did also talk with the economists about the difference between the recession in the late 80s and now. And surprisingly to me, as someone who lives in Anchorage, the housing market hasn't been, quote-unquote, challenged was the word that was used. And of course, all of this information is very valuable, because we as legislators tend to get the anecdotal, and we see our neighbors putting their homes up for sale. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to make assumptions based on that. But we'll be following the housing market and certainly the work that you're doing at Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. So with that, I want to thank you very much for making yourself available and for the work that you do. And we'll be looking forward to the plan that you're hoping to complete in the fall.
Senator, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I appreciate the attention of everyone. I'll continue to stay on the line and listen to my fellow ARTRs and the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development's testimony.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Bill, at Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, if you're not already.
I have you up on video right now, so I'm watching you guys in on the 10-20-second delay.
Thank you. So next, I'll go right into our next presenter because he's online. And then after Tim, we will take a brief at ease because our next presenters are in the room, give you time to come to the table. So next we have Tim Dillon with the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. Welcome, Mr. Dillon.
Thank you very much, Senator Costello.
So we will let you go right ahead into your presentation and then ask questions when you're done.
Thank you. First of all, our operation is a little bit different than Bill's, and we actually partner on a variety of different things. Bill and I have known each other for a long time, so it's been very, very helpful to work with Bill. But we're a two-person operation with a 12-person board, and as you know, the Kenai Peninsula Borough is rather large. We've been seeing the same things. You know, the Kenai Peninsula jobs were down 2.4%. We had a small decline in construction in the specialty trade contractors, but we saw a little bit of a bump 15-16 in the heavy construction employment. And a lot of that was tied back to the hospital down here in the Soldotna area. The other thing is we have to remember that the data that we're looking at right now is January through June, so it really doesn't show our strongest months of tourism and seafood quite yet. But we are very pleased that from a population standpoint, we were actually up where you saw some out-migration in a variety of places around the state. From 15 to 16, we were up 0.65%. So we were pleased with that. A little bit about our organization. KPED is our 501c4. Our funding sources are the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the U.S. Department of Commerce and Economic Development Administration, and then we also have our renewed note, organization, ARTA, with you, as far as the state, without a fiscal note. But one of the things that's really helped us along is we also have an incubator. We have approximately 20 offices, 6,000 square feet, 12-plus acres of fenced-in yard that we're able to help different businesses, and we wind up getting rents off of those. We also have our sister organization, which is the Kenai Peninsula Opportunities, which is a 501c3. This is where we run the Construction Academy through, which I'm sure most of you are familiar, you know, with entry-level electrical, welding, plumbing, carpentry, and diesel mechanic. Plus, we handle a variety of community-type events through that. We just got done this past June with going through a comprehensive economic development strategy. We went through a process that took us almost a year, that involved not only our board of directors, but also a variety of community focus groups that included everybody from tourism to gas and oil, fishing, our chambers, and healthcare. If at some point you'd like to look at the whole document, it is downloadable at kped.org. The key group that helped us through this whole process, though, was the University of Alaska, the Center for Economic Development. Through this whole process, as we were trying to put together a strategy for the next 5 years, I go back to the comment Bill made. You know, you have to have buy-in. You have to have buy-in from the local businesses. I actually personally visited with over 100 different businesses on the Kenai Peninsula during that process to be able to put things together. And what we wound up with was a vision for our economic stability and growth. And this is our plan for 2016 through 2021. We have six goals that we have broken down that we've come up with. Our number one thing before we get to that was we didn't want to just produce a pretty paper weight for people's coffee tables. We wanted something that people could see themselves in and actually be able to work with as they went along. So the first one is regional partnerships. Developing and enhancing those partnerships, whether it be with the Small Business Development Center, the Tourism and Marketing Council, the Kenai Young Professionals, or the individual cities' economic commissions. Meeting with them, trying to put together partnerships, seeing what we could do to work with them and to help them. The second thing was infrastructure and technology, which is very, very important on the Kenai Peninsula. I was discussing with the city manager over in Soldovia here 2 days ago, they still don't have a cell tower that they can get the new and updated cell service. They're still on the old system, so you can't even buy a cell phone that'll work over there. You have to be able to go on Amazon and buy one of the ones with the old system. So we're trying to assist with infrastructure and technology. The third is workforce and human capital. Working with the school district and the superintendent, the Kenai Peninsula College, AvTech, and, you know, in fact, Kathy LaCompe and I have had several discussions about things, working with her, the Kenai Peninsula Construction Academy, and workforce development with Rachel O'Brien, and trying to make sure that when jobs are open, that we have people that are trained appropriately so they can be hired directly from here on the peninsula. The fourth one of our goals as we're moving forward is our business climate and entrepreneurship, not only acting as an incubation center, but also assisting with new businesses starting up. One of the things that we have found here recently is that there's been people that, because of where they live and family, they want to stay on the Kenai Peninsula. So they might be losing their job, so they're trying to go ahead and figure out, what do I do next? For example, we have a gentleman that back this past fall has worked on the slope for years, came to us, and he, as of January 1, has opened up the Kenai Peninsula Driving Instruction. It's housed here in our building, and now you're able to get a CDL down here on the peninsula, be able to take the instruction and everything, and all that happened here on the Kenai Peninsula instead of having to go up to Anchorage. We also have a microloan program that we're in the middle of right now, retooling to see how it could best fit people. For example, when I went out visiting with all the different businesses, one of the businesses said to me, you know, we've got a real non-traditional need here. There's a lot of us that our businesses are from May until the end of August. If we could get a bridge loan put together so that we could go ahead and maybe start up a little bit earlier and work a little bit later, we could try and increase those shoulder seasons. So we're working with that, and that's part of the business climate and entrepreneurship. The next one is probably the one that we hear the most about, and that's quality of place or quality of living. Goes back to some of the same comments that Bill had made earlier. People need to be safe in their environment, know that they have good schools, but on top of that, they know they don't even have to take a long drive. They can go right out the door here, and within minutes you can be hiking someplace, you can be fishing on a world-class river. There's plenty of recreational opportunities out here. We've been working with a variety of folks, including forestry department, on trying to get them an additional grant for infrastructure. Because one of the things that people don't realize, I'm sure you guys do, but people from the lower 48 don't realize, when you take a community like the Kenai Peninsula, how big it swells to during the summer, and we need additional resources to be able to fight fires and some of the other problems that we wind up having during the summer months. We also are working with our artisans. As you know, we have a lot of artisans down in this area trying to come up with a little bit of a village concept of what they can do and how to make sure that their products are getting out there, and they can go ahead and go that next step. Instead of just producing art, teach other people that want to have the opportunity to learn about glass making or pottery or some of those other things when the rest of their family is down here fishing or hiking and things. The sixth goal that we have out of the whole thing is knowledge creation and dissemination. This is one of the things that we've really tried to work hard on here over the last couple of years with putting together a situation and prospects book. This book helps people when they're looking at our area to be able to go ahead and potentially bring their business here. Tracking and reporting economic and demographic trends. Being able to give them up-to-date information. This has been really, really helpful for a lot of folks, but we want to take it one step further. We want to make sure that this information is exactly what the people need and want, so that they don't have to look any place else for the information. The other is in the dissemination. One of the things that we've done is we have an industry outlook forum. We just had it back on January 11th. It was attended, it was the best attendance they've ever had. It's a one-day industry outlook forum. We had speakers from healthcare, tourism, gas and oil, fishing, some local entrepreneurs. It was an outstanding day from 8:30 in the morning until 7:30 in the evening. But that's another way that we're trying to get the information out there so that people know what we're doing. And we're very fortunate. We have just formed a partnership with Bill and the organization up in Anchorage to work on data for us to be able to get access to some additional information and data in order to be able to produce the kind of reports that we need down here to assist with the people here on the Kenai Peninsula. And in that, I tried to go as quickly as I could, but that kind of is where we are, what we're doing, and be more than happy to answer questions for you.
Thank you, Tim, and certainly there's a lot of information that you provided and a lot of really valuable work that you're doing. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, I want to thank you again for being online, and I think you might be hearing from me because I'm going to read through what I heard and also look at your, you know, the things that you're doing, and hopefully we'll continue the discussion.
Well, thank you very much. And in closing, I hope if anybody has any questions, especially when you start looking at the SEDS and the folks that will be presenting next, we're mirroring the same exact process and having people be involved. In fact, I'm on that task force for Commissioner Laddick, and I think that it's a great process, and it's something that we need to continue to do. And hopefully then it gives you a roadmap of what's going on and where we need to go with the state. So thank you very much, and I'll stay online to be able to listen. Thank you.
Thank you. And so we'll take a brief at ease before we have our next presenters come forward. Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. We're the Committee on the Economy, and we're the only committee with a Facebook page. So I'd like to plug the Facebook page.
She's into marketing, you know.
Well, I think it's really important to make ourselves really easily accessible to everybody. And so even I myself have had trouble looking through the web page to find the Senate, to find the bill, to find the committee. So we've decided to have a Facebook page, so it just tells what's happening in the committee, and you know, if it's another way Alaskans can listen in, I've gotten some really good response, so want to just put in a plug for the Facebook page. Next, we have members from the Southeast Conference. We have Shelley Wright, the Executive Director, Robert Venables, the Energy Coordinator. Welcome, Shelley. And also we have Melani Shivens, who is a contractor with them. She has a company called, let's see, what is your company called?
Rancos Data,
thank you. So welcome, and please feel free to begin with your presentation. It's my understanding we have a digital PowerPoint slide for the committee members as we go through this, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us to come and speak with you today. Thank you for recognizing the artists and their value in the state and the process of defining the economy and making it a better place to live. And also thank you for shining a bright light on the value of a good economy and healthy communities in Alaska. It's really refreshing to see a committee that's really their focus. And so thank you again for doing that. Southeast Conference has been in existence since 1958, and we've remained a stellar organization for economic development, and our mission is to build strong economies, healthy communities, and a quality environment. One way we do that is by forming partnerships and creating a plan that everyone in the region can get their arms around and understand and use within their planning processes. Our motto is sort of think local and plan regional, and so we like to keep our communities close at hand with us. So I'm going to turn the presentation over to Melani, and she's going to explain to you about our plan and give you some of our statistics in the region.
Okay, thank you so much, Shelley, and greetings. We wanted to do a couple things for you today. First, we want to walk through the current state of our economy and then move forward with an overview of the Southeast Alaska Economic Plan. Southeast Alaska is 500 miles long, and we're made up of mainland and more than 1,000 islands, which means that we have 18,500 miles of saltwater shoreline, which makes this a unique region. We have 34 communities in our region, and we make up about 10% of the Southeast, of the Alaska overall economy. We're 10% of the population, 11% of all jobs, and 10% of all wages. quickly going back from statehood to the 1990s, the population and employment levels in Southeast Alaska more than doubled, and our growth was really strong, and it looked a lot like the state overall. However, in the 1990s, that all came crashing down when we lost most of our timber industry, and for the next 16 years, Southeast Alaska endured a sustained economic decline. 2007 marked the last year of that decline, and from 2008 to 2015, we were on the right track again, and it was lovely. But now we're entering into a difficult period, and the real question, of course, is how the impact of the state fiscal crisis will impact the regional economy. If we look at early 2016 data, we can see that the impact of the Alaska budget crisis is and will continue to be a major challenge for our region. In 2016, the jobs in the region were down by 600 jobs, or 1.4%. That was, to compare back to the state, it was slightly better than the state did, but still a loss nonetheless. We lost jobs, but we also lost people in 2016. Our population dropped by 500 people, and most of that loss, 400 of it, came out of Juneau alone, making the drop the third largest ever single year drop in the history of Juneau. Our peak population was in 2014. And whenever we're talking about Southeast Alaska, I always like to start with the big picture. How does our economy, what does our economy actually look like?
Melani, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you mind going back to the slide?
Yes.
So that's the population now is 73,812?
That's correct.
And that has to change during the summer, right? Because I'm surprised at that number. I thought it was less.
Yeah, we look at however population is done, it's I think it's measured once a year, and so it's really a single point measure in terms of annual population.
So you don't have the data that says in the summer months it rises to this level and then.
Yeah, we absolutely have huge increases in employment in the summer, mm-hmm. and so you have a number of people coming in to be involved in the tourism industry, the fishing industry, the construction industry. So there are ebbs and flows, but the population, it's counted as a single number for every year.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so last year in Southeast Alaska, we had 46,000 average annual jobs, and that includes self-employment. Our workers earned $2.2 billion, and the most important sectors of our economy were government, seafood, and tourism, which together comprise more than half of all of our income earnings. So there was a question earlier about how an area compares back to the state economy, and so this slide kind of shows that. If you look at our top three drivers, government, seafood, and the visitor industry, they are significantly more dominant in the Southeast Alaska economy than they are in the state economy as a whole. When looking at our earnings, one-third of our economy is government, compared to about a quarter of Alaska overall. Our seafood economy is nearly three times more significant three times more significant in Southeast Alaska as a percentage of our economy. And our visitor industry is about 50% larger, again, as a percentage of our total workforce earnings.
Mm-hmm. Since the question is on the slide, so the government jobs, I mean, obviously those, it's the majority of state government jobs, but do you happen to know what percentage comprises federal jobs?
Yes.
Okay.
It's my very next slide. So
great.
I will get to that in 1 second.
I'll stop interrupting you.
No, it's a really good question. It's a good question. Thank you. So just to round out this slide, and feel free to interrupt at any time. Please do. So those are our three major drivers, but when you're looking at our three-legged stool, it looks a lot different than the Alaska three-legged stool as a whole, because we really have no oil and gas industry employment to speak of. And when you look at the state of Alaska as a whole, it's 11% of all employment earnings are from the oil and gas industry. And so what this means is that we're really more sensitive to drops in state jobs and state spending, but less sensitive to declines in oil and gas development. And now for the elements of our government. So our federal government, we makes up 8% of all wages. Government is 35% of all employment. And the key element of that is our state government, which makes up 14% of all regional wages. But if you're just looking at Juneau, state government accounts for more than a quarter of all local wages. Preliminary numbers for 2016 are grim. We've lost 425 jobs in our government sector, and almost all of those are state jobs. And further cuts are projected to cut another 200 Southeast jobs in the first half of 2017 alone.
Hey, Lonnie.
Yes, please.
One of the points of interest in the building, in both the Senate Finance Committee and our committee, and in discussions, is when we do talk about state jobs, do you happen to know, when you say 425 jobs lost, were those filled positions, or do you know?
Yeah, so those are average annual jobs. So we're looking at employment over 12 months, in every month divided by 12. And so my understanding is that a lot of those jobs are lost through attrition. So maybe the jobs were vacant and they just haven't been filled. I think it's a mix. I definitely have heard of people who've gotten their pink slips. I don't have a specific number for what percentage each element of those job cuts make up.
Sure, clearly you're not the point person on that, but I wanted to ask that question, and we'll be continuing to look for that information. So
yeah,
thank you.
And continuing on that same vein, just to talk a little bit more about our state job losses, those cuts in 2016, I just wanted to point out that they come on top of additional job losses through a mix of different types of cuts. From 2014 through 2016, 600 Alaska jobs have already been reduced, with associated annual earnings of $35 million. So that's $35 million of less earnings that's in our economy in 2016 than there was 2 years ago in 2014 in the state sector alone. That is 11% decrease of our state workers altogether over 2014 numbers, and it really is a huge economic hit. Most of those numbers come out of Juneau. Three-quarters of those losses are out of Juneau, with Ketchikan making up most of the rest. And reduced state spending also has a direct negative impact on our private sector. It's not just our public sector, since many local businesses provide the majority of their services to the public sector, and so a reduction of government employment and spending decreases goods demand for goods and services across our region. Construction is another industry that's trending downwards. Jobs fell by 90 jobs in 2016, and unfortunately the contraction of the Alaska State Capital budget means that future projects are less likely to be added to the list of planned activities, so that construction pipeline, if you will. Legislative capital appropriations in the region have already dropped by 88% from FY13 levels to the FY17 budget. 2017 projections estimate that construction related to employment will drop by another 100 jobs in 2017. Also down is our timber industry, and unfortunately this continues to be our fastest declining industry. It's dropping even faster than our state government employment. Since 2010, employment in this industry has been reduced by another 24%, and that's in addition to the dramatic losses of the 1990s and early 2000s that you can see on this slide. Timber industry employment is likely to continue to decrease for a variety of federal factors. And whenever we talk about our timber industry, we're largely talking about jobs that are generated on our federal lands. And so I like to bring up the point that Forest Service manages 78% of the lands in Southeast Alaska, while the federal government as a whole manages 94% of all of our lands in Southeast Alaska. And so as these lands support fewer jobs, it becomes a concern for the economy as a whole, because we really only have 1/20th of 1% of land that is truly private in Southeast Alaska. But there are bright spots in the Southeast Alaska economy. The visitor industry has the strongest outlook in Southeast Alaska of all of our industries. We added 500 new tourism jobs there last year and 1,500 jobs since 2010. 1/3 of all Alaska visitor spending occurs in Southeast Alaska, and 2016 was our best year ever. There were about 1.5 million air, ferry, and cruise ship passenger arrivals to our region in 2016, for an all-time high, surpassing our previous record that was developed in 2008. It was an all-time record for a number of arriving airline passengers, and we passed the million passenger mark for our cruise industry for the first time since 2009, and a new record for total cruise ship passengers is expected in 2017.
Melanie, so that's pretty amazing, the number of visitors that you have coming to Juneau that comprises, you know, what percent of the entire state. So we all know that often the returning visitor, the independent traveler, was first a cruise passenger. Do you happen to have that statistic?
No, I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you. We can get that later.
I can find it and send it to you. Thanks. Of course, there is a concern here as well due to the deep reductions in the Alaska tourism marketing budget by the state that could impact the growth of our tourism in the longer term. It was $18 million in 2015, but will be only $1.5 million in 2017, so that represents a 92% cut. Another growing sector is mining. Employment is up and metal prices have turned around, although mineral exploration has remained dormant with the exception of the Palmer Project near Haines. And another bright spot and something that we're really excited about is our jobs that are ocean-focused. So maritime jobs and wages, we really define that as any jobs that are focused on or take place on or are focused on the ocean. Maritime jobs and wages were each up last year, and in Southeast Alaska, our maritime wages make up more than a quarter of all workforce earnings. And just to give that state comparison again, statewide maritime is about 11% of the total economy. And in Southeast Alaska, we have nearly 7,000 of private and U.S. Coast Guard blue jobs, as we call maritime jobs sometimes, with $400 million in associated wages. In the past 5 years, and I'm only going through 2015 with this number, I don't have the 2016 numbers yet, we added 1,000 maritime jobs to our economy, while total blue wages grew by about $100 million, and that is a massive growth. It is a 31% increase in earnings in that sector over the past 5 years. The largest component of our maritime sector is our seafood industry, which accounts for two-thirds of all maritime jobs. In 2016, it was a bit of a rough year for the regional fishing industry with lower than expected pink runs compounded by low prices, but 2017 is expected to be an improvement on that. And so that's just a quick overview I wanted to give on the economy before we can lead into our next item of discussion. We released our new five-year economic plan for the region about 6 months ago, our five-year SEDS. And this plan builds on our strengths in the Southeast Alaska, and it also creates a blueprint for economic growth moving forward. And we took our time with this. The Southeast 2020 SEDS was a strategy-driven process developed by a diverse work group. People from nearly all of our communities were involved in the various elements of the planning process. We took a year. We had 27 meetings, and we engaged more than 400 people in the process. And just reflecting back on what we heard from Bill and Tim earlier today, from our perspective, there is no fancy trick to developing an economic plan. It's a lot of work, a lot of good old-fashioned meetings, forging partnerships, getting the right people to the table, and making sure that the ownership of the plan, as was mentioned by the two previous speakers, is with the people that it's being developed for. Case in point, step one was a SWOT analysis, understanding our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. We had 180 people from 22 communities in the room participating in this process. We generated 1,300 handwritten comments. It was a lot of work, but it was a really valuable process. Through it, we were able to quantify our top qualities. Our top strengths are people, our ability to collaborate across region, our seafood industry, our tourism industry, and our recreation opportunities. Our top weaknesses are energy and transportation costs and federal government overreach and the cost of doing business. Our top threats are federal government regulations, a shrinking state budget, and the constant talk of a capital move. The key opportunities that were quantified, this seafood tourism, energy, timber, and maritime became the key components of our plan. There was a discussion of resiliency earlier, economic resiliency, and we did have an economic resiliency component in the plan. in the form of an economic resiliency map showing how Southeast Alaskans are responding to the state fiscal crisis in order to try to keep their businesses and communities economically stable. When we asked our members how they are weatherizing for the economic storm, the top response we've received were from business leaders that are currently trying to reduce their expenses by reducing employees and delaying investments, which is something we don't want to be seeing. The next key strategy to remain resilient was to continue to focus on economic development, like Southeast Conference is continuing to do. And the third largest response was from government leaders that are doing their best to reduce government spending and services. The fourth top answer was a recognition of the need to increase state revenue through a mix of tax increases. And finally, what we heard over and over again was a plea that whatever is cut, we need to maintain our ferry system in order to retain economic viability as a region.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. How come, I see that the size of your font goes down, but it seems like maintain ferry service, not only is it the fifth item, but it's just like a little teeny afterthought.
Oh, yeah. So I probably have, in the context of doing this quickly in this setting, I should have probably presented it differently. It's part of a larger infographic, and the number of responses are reflected in the size of the font. So it was just intended to be a quick and easy way to understand how many people provided each of the different answers. But yes, maintaining ferry system is incredibly important to Southeast Conference, and probably is depicted poorly on this slide.
Okay, well, I would suggest that the first two can't happen unless the fifth one happens. The other two arguably can.
And we absolutely agree. So yeah. Thank you for that comment.
Thank you.
I think it's actually a vision exam that we're experiencing.
I'm having a
read-along.
So there are many parts to our economic plan that got put out, but the heart of it is really a list of 47 objectives for growing our economy that fit into the framework of what Southeast Alaska is and what we're good at. And I know you can't read them all here, but I think we have some handouts that do have them all listed. And out of those objectives, we prioritized 8 to become our core Southeast Alaska work plan moving forward. And each of these priority objectives has project champions, it has partners, it has steps to be completed, it has budgets. They each have individual timelines and individual evaluation measures and metrics so that we can track progress and success as we move forward. We do have a publication for you today that details the progress that's been made on these objectives in the past 6 months, and I don't have time to go into that much detail, but I do want to quickly run through what these 8 priority objectives are. So we heard that we know that our region needs its ferries, so our number one objective in big, bold print is to minimize the impacts of budget cuts on our ferry system and to develop a sustainable operation model to maintain the longevity of our ferry system. We know that energy costs are a huge economic barrier, and so we want to work with the federal and state government to promote and develop regional energy projects in Southeast Alaska. Again, focused on the reduction of energy costs, opportunity abound for alternative energy and energy efficiency measures, and so one of the things that we're doing is looking for different ways to replace diesel and thereby reduce the cost of energy in the region for our communities and our businesses. We see that we have a growing number of maritime jobs, but our population of workers does not have the skill sets needed to be perfectly matched with these jobs, and we want to change that, and so we are changing that through local workforce development training. We know that seafood is one of our greatest strengths. Up to a half billion pounds of seafood is extracted from Southeast Alaska waters annually, but most of this is exported with minimal processing, and a great deal of waste is produced that could be developed into new products and monetized. We want more of our seafood to be processed in the region so we can have a greater return on investment from this resource.
Madam Chair. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I once had a conversation with people from ASME, and they talked about a pilot project to try to do that value-added work with seafood in Southeast. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So some of the things that we're working on right now is to develop different products that are either developed through new ways of looking at seafood or using the waste product to develop different products. And so one thing that we're doing in partnership with the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation is developing working to support them to develop a seafood protein powder that's human grade. So I guess the rest haven't been human grade before. So using something like the product that you see on the screen and develop that into a protein powder. We also are looking at, right now the Symphony of Seafood is going on, and they're developing new products. One of those products is a smoked salmon ice cream that is so good you wouldn't believe it. And so just rethinking salmon in a can, it's so good. And so there's just many ways in which we can relook at what we have more processing, whether it's salmon caviar, whether it's more smoked salmon products, just more processing that can take place in the region. Pharmaceuticals, yes, you know what, I have this whole list here. I did write it down in case I got asked. So examples include pet food, pharmaceuticals, nutraceuticals, and health food products. So those are the specific areas that are part of that ASME focus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Senator Gardner, do you have a follow-up?
Just a quick question. The Alaska Symphony of Seafood is in Seattle. Is that correct?
It takes place in a couple of different locations. So it's going to be in Juneau, I want to say, in a couple of weeks from now.
All right.
There's
Thank you. We'll watch for that.
Senator Hughes.
While we're on the topic of seafood, thank you, Madam Chair. I learned recently that we'd had an office in Tokyo focused on seafood and marketing seafood, and now that the focus has been changed to LNG. So I was just wondering if you're expecting that to impact the economic activity related to seafood, since that's a huge part of the economic activity in Southeast.
Yeah, I don't know the specific answer to that. I know that there's so many things that are happening that can and do affect our seafood. I know that there's some concerns about world trade agreements that could and might impact our seafood moving forward, but I don't have a specific answer to that, the Tokyo office question.
Thank you.
And so we don't want to just rely on the products that already come out of our oceans. We want to create new ones in the form of oyster farms and gooey duck development and seaweed planting and harvesting. So we want to grow a mariculture industry in Alaska and in Southeast Alaska. Another of our strengths is our abundance of natural beauty and tourism potential, and we want to work harder to market Southeast Alaska visitor opportunities, especially in our smaller communities and especially smaller scale tourism operators that maybe haven't benefited as much from the larger cruise ship marketing that goes on of the Southeast Alaska region. And finally, our eighth priority objective is we want to shore up our traditional industries, and we need, in order to shore up our timber industry, we really need to have an adequate, economic, and dependable supply of timber from the Tongass National Forest provided by the federal government to our regional timber operators. So we're also working hard to continue to make that happen.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So relating to timber, is the plan or expectation and hope be to export round logs, or is anybody working on value added with timber?
So our last remaining mid-sized mill in Southeast Alaska is the Viking Mill, and just like seafood, our goal is to have a maximum amount of production taking place in the region, and when there is an economic timber sale, there is enough wood for Viking to be able to, there's a high enough quality of wood for Viking to be able to process most of that wood in the Viking plant and not export it in the round, and so that's obviously our goal, because there is more economic development created by doing the primary processing here in Alaska.
Thank you.
Shelley, and if you don't mind mentioning your name for those listening online, since there's so many female voices in the room.
Yeah, this is Shelley Wright again. I just wanted to mention that there are a lot of cottage industries in Southeast Alaska, a lot of small mom-and-pop operations that are using very minimal amount of trees to do the work that they do, some cabin packages and guitars, violins, those kinds of things, musical instrument. Alaska's wood is some of the last wood available because of its good quality for making musical instruments. So there is some cottage industry in the timber industry, but for a really full-scale economic driving timber industry, we have a lot of work to do.
Thank you.
And the Viking Mill is one of the largest producers of piano wood. And anyway, used to be with better timber.
Can't cut those kind of trees down anymore.
So that does round out our eight economic initiatives that are the heart of the plan. But I just tossed the slide in here so that we could represent that there's 39 other really important economic initiatives as well. They're not prioritized because we can only focus on so much, but they're also really important. And that really is our quick flyby, my quick flyby overview for you today. And I'd like to open it up to any questions for myself or other Southeast Conference colleagues.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time you took in the putting that together. Senator Meyer?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that presentation. It's very enlightening. Can you go back one slide, though? And these are your priorities for your economic development in Southeast?
Yeah. It's probably better to show them here. So, yeah, we have 47 priorities altogether, economic initiatives altogether, and eight that I, like I said, we've gone ahead and made an entire plan for, including a budget and a timeline and partners and people who will do it. The rest are things that we hope to happen, but we don't have such a concrete plan for developed.
What, if I may, Madam Chair, if it seemed to me, your mining potential is great down here, and you've had some success, and those are pretty high-paying jobs, but that's not a priority?
Well, it's I think what is included in the plan is things that we can support and work on as a conference to move forward. And mining is something that is very strong. It's something that we support. We do have a mining objective in here, but there isn't the maybe a need to work so strongly with. I'll let you answer the question.
Hi, this is Shelley again. These are current this year priorities. Each year we'll evaluate. Right now the mining activity that's potential mining activity for Prince of Wales Island is dormant. And so we've chosen to take our time and work on these other opportunities right now. If there is activity that happens in the mineral industry, we'll jump right on it and revalue our priorities. But right now, with all the dormancy on Prince of Wales Island, the two big mines there that really don't have the investment right now to do much, Greens Creek is pretty healthy, and Kensington is really healthy. If they need anything from us, we're right there to help them out. But these were current needs, and so we chose these.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Shelley Wright, the Executive Director of the Southeast Conference. And Shelley, it's my understanding of kind of going back to that slide where you had, where Melanie talked about the process where you put these goals together. This plan, it's my understanding, is not driven by an economic analysis of the importance, say, of mining. It just happens to be the people who came and participated in the process. These were the priorities that they stated, because you also see tourism is a visitor industry is a priority, and it's growing also like mining, and it's up there. So I just wanted to give you a chance to clarify whether or not this is based on any economic analysis or basically what the communities and the residents perceive or want to be their focus.
That's correct. This is Shelley Wright again. That is absolutely correct. These were the action initiatives that we had a group of people that raised their hand and said, I will work on this. I want to make this happen for the region. If we have another group of people stand up and say, food security is really important to us, and we want to get a plan together and make a concerted effort to make this happen, then Southeast Conference will be behind them. We won't necessarily take away any of the other objectives because our value is with our partners. And so whatever we can do to move forward those opportunities for our partners in the region, that's where we stand and that's where we support. And right now these were the high eight. And it's a moving target. It's a working document. It's fluid. It's online. We can change it at any moment. We evaluate it every 6 months and see if these action initiatives are actually having action happen. If there's progress being made, if there's not progress being made, we'll reevaluate and take a look at that and see if it's something that maybe turned out that it's on floating on its own and doesn't really have an active committee. But so, yeah, it's definitely an alive, active document.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Senator Meyer's question reminded me about the whole issue of rare earth elements. And a few years ago, it was all the big, exciting new thing. As a principal island, if I'm not mistaken, is there any development going on there now? And do you know why that is?
Well, certainly they're still involved. It's hard to get investment when you're working in an environment like Alaska because the investment is so high and the hurdles are very high to jump over. I think the Ucor is the company that last I heard was working on the rare earths. And Chelsea, I will introduce Chelsea Goucher, our president, who's sitting behind me. She's from Ketchikan, and she probably would know more about the development of the mining situation in southeast or down on Prince of Wales Island. But I think an exciting venture, and they were having some really good success, and there is quite a cache there from what I understand, and the Niblack mine is also, it's mm-hmm. akin to the Greens Creek mine. All of the minerals that are in the Greens Creek mine are pretty much in the Niblack mine as well, but they're having a lot of trouble with investment in this economic times right now, so I think that's just probably the main reason that it's slow.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any final questions of the presenters? Senator Hughes.
Thank you. If there's time, Madam Chair. First, I want to say it's a delight to see familiar faces. I've enjoyed working with you over the years on ARDR issues. And I also want to make the comment that your photography and your slides were among the best I've seen since I've been in the legislature, if not the best. I maybe misunderstood something, but I just wanted to give you a chance to clarify. When you were at the very beginning, when you were overviewing the types of jobs here and the loss that you're seeing, you mentioned something along the lines that you're much more sensitive in this area to the loss of state government jobs than you are to perhaps the health of the oil and gas industry. And I just want to make the tie-in that the revenue from the oil and gas industry is really what has largely paid for state government. So it's important to be sensitive to the health of that industry. So I just thought I'd make that comment. And then on your final slide with the circles, you had energy legislation. So that's my question. What exactly is that? Maybe I missed it if you went into detail. Are you putting forward a bill this session?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Robert Venables. I'm the Energy and Transportation Coordinator for Southeast Conference, and through the Chair, Senator Hughes. I think most of that is the attention on the federal energy bill, although we're very supportive of the work of the Alaska Energy Authority with the Alaska Affordable Energy Strategy that's come forth, the PACE legislation that is in the being introduced, as well as a number of other incremental bills that are going to be coming to the state through the state legislature. So we're not introducing any standalone pieces, but we are in support of those because those are meaningful to the region as well. But our members at the time of this was very cognizant of Senator Murkowski's energy bill because it has a lot of good tenets for the whole state, including Southeast Alaska.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Senator Hughes. So again, thank you very much for coming before us, and I cannot let you go, Melanie, without saying congratulations to your son, who, if you don't know, won a national cooking contest and traveled to Washington, D.C., if I'm not mistaken, and prepared a seafood plate for, if you want to, you know, fill in the details, please.
So he won a Healthy Lunchtime Challenge. He was a representative for the state of Alaska and got to go. The prize was winning dinner with Michelle Obama. He had developed a dish that he called a halibut wrapped Alaska. It was halibut on a crepe on a bed of red tip lettuce and blueberries, along with a spinach smoothie. And in the final menu that got served to all the winning kids, the spinach smoothie was picked. So we do have pictures of Michelle Obama and a room full of people drinking Denali spinach smoothie. And he also did get selected to appear on Shop Junior. And so that's coming up on February 7th. He'll be the first kid ever from the state of Alaska to be on Shop Junior. And again, he's cooked a wild Alaska seafood dish as his specialty to show his talent. So his focus is definitely Southeast Alaska seafood.
Well, congratulations, and please set out an extra plate for me because I will be offered to taste test anything that comes out of his kitchen.
So, we will do.
Thank you. And so we'll take a brief Eddie's to allow Commissioner Hladek time to come forward. Thank you. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and with us today we have the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We have with us Commissioner Chris Hladek. Welcome. We also have Brittany Siani Haywood, who is the Director of the Division of Economic Development, and also we are joined by Ethan Tyler. And Ethan, you can provide your title for us when you introduce yourself, when you make your comments. So, we've asked you to come before us and talk about the work that you've been undertaking, which is similar to the process that we've heard from the regional economic development organizations this afternoon, which is all very exciting work. So we do have about 35 minutes. I just wanted to let the committee members know that. So I think we'll let you have your presentation, and then we'll limit the questions to the very end.
Okay. For the record, my name is Chris Hladek. I'm the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and I'd like to thank you, Senator, and members of the committee for hosting this discussion about economic development in the state. The initiative we have going on in our department, I think, is very important work that will complement what the other ARTRs have been working on. And I'd like to thank Senator Hughes for sitting on our steering committee, as well as Bill Popp, Shelley Wright, Tim Dillon, Chris Norris, who's in the audience, and Milani Shivens. So I'm going to give a brief introduction and let these guys give the slide presentation. But first, to follow up on some of the comments that I heard, I've lived in rural Alaska for 25 years, and when I moved to Juneau in 2015, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. There's Costco, there's Home Depot. Things are very cheap here compared to what you pay in Alaska or some of the other communities. They don't participate in the survey, but you'd find that they are very expensive. You had a question about how much money is left in the grants pipeline. When I got here in 2015, there was $2.1 billion. Now there's about $900 million left. $500 of it is encumbered or unobligated. There's going to be a report come out on this by OMB next week, and we're going to make sure you get it because there's lots of little pockets of money, so you'll be able to see where those capital grants are. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is with the capital budget, and it used to be $2 billion.
Excuse me, I have interrupted you, and I said I wouldn't, but do you mind repeating those numbers?
Oh, $900 million?
The amount that's left in the capital that from previous capital budgets.
Oh, $2.1 billion in 2015 to approximately right now $900 million. $500 of that is encumbered or promised to someone. And then there's some other, there's lots of little pockets of money. So we need to get your report on that. Mm-hmm. But that's the quick answer.
Thank you.
The other thing that I think is important to point out is having been a city manager in the state for 25 years, any money that's spent in rural Alaska comes back to the major populations. So there's a paradigm shift going on right now, which a lot of those economies of rural Alaska were bolstered by government spending in schools, but also with capital projects. The all of the materials come from either Anchorage or Juneau or Fairbanks. The construction companies, the construction equipment, etc. So there's a paradigm shift going on, and it's going to have to be. We're working really hard on this as loan programs. How do we get the work done? Because we know it's out there. I believe the year that there was $2 billion in capital projects, there was a request for $6 billion. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Those projects return money to the economy. But, you know, that's probably a discussion for another time. As you've seen, the SEDS process is developed by the Economic Development Administration. We have a $100,000 grant to provide that, provide this process. It's a process that they know it works, and you've heard from folks here today. It is working. We're going to complement that process. But at the end of the day, what we're going to have is a tool for the state. And we're already talking about planning the next steps where we're going to go into here at the end. But you use this economic strategy to then craft where are you going to focus, where are you going to put your work into to get the most results. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brittany and Ethan to go through the
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you get off the hook here, Commissioner, I just want to follow up on a question Senator Hughes had earlier about the tie-in to the oil and gas industry, because I've experienced the same thing when I go into rural Alaska or even here in Southeast, is that oil and gas is not important to them, but the reality is that's where we get our construction jobs, that's where we get the funding for education, that's where we get our new schools, and that's where we get our capital projects. So, you know, somehow there's been a disconnect there, and I don't know what we can do about it, but I think that's I guess we just need to do a better job of educating people where the state gets its money.
I agree.
Hello, thank you so much for having us. My name is Bernie Tony Haywood. I'm the director for the Division of Economic Development in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. So, I'm going to look at kind of this process and what is a comprehensive economic development strategy, and that's a lot to say, and we'll talk about our branding effort on this project in a minute. But economic development planning, as implemented through a SED successfully, serves to engage the community leaders, leverage involvement from the private sector, and establish a strategic blueprint for collaboration moving forward. And the SEDS provides a capacity building foundation by which the public sector, working in conjunction with other economic actors, individuals, businesses, industries, creates an environment for regional economic prosperity. So the SEDS is really a result of regional owned planning processes and is designed to build the capacity and to guide us in our economic prosperity and resiliency for an area or region. And so as you've seen, most of the economic development organizations, or very many of them, have this process already in place, and so we're taking it and rolling it up to a statewide level. The SEDS does need to incorporate the concept of resiliency as an important piece, and that is the ability to avoid, withstand, and move past from either economic shifts or also natural disasters that we might be facing. So the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, or Northern Opportunity, is going to build on past efforts and existing regional SEDS as our foundation. So there have been numerous efforts made in the past, and those are not going away, and we're using them as our starting point. The project is also guided by the U.S. Economic Development Administration, and as the Commissioner noted, we do have a grant that is funding the initial phase of this process. It is also overseen by a strategic committee that is made up of industry and community leaders throughout the state. We meet approximately monthly with the strategic committee to gather feedback and input on the process, where we are, what we're doing, and where we're headed. And the division is also partnering with our Alaska Regional Development Organizations, or ARDRs, on this process as well.
Thank you for the record. My name is Ethan Tyler. I'm a manager in the Division of Economic Development in Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I'm also a proud fan of the Facebook page for Senate Labor and Commerce. So thank you for putting that together. So I wanted to provide a little bit of information on our approach. And as Brittany mentioned, the branding for this effort is called Northern Opportunity. A couple of years ago, we created a brand for doing business in Alaska, which was North 2 Opportunity. And since we didn't want to expend too much budget on a branding effort, we were able to manipulate that logo just a little bit. And so an inward-facing effort for our comprehensive economic development strategy is Alaska Northern Opportunity, Alaska's economic development strategy. So as you've heard through a number of our Alaska regional development organizations, the approach and the desire of these comprehensive economic development strategies is one of inclusiveness. And so the more input that you can get into putting this plan together, the more buy-in that you have and the more successful that your plan will be. And it's really meant to be a bottom-built strategy that everybody can get behind. So to that end, one portion of this is a research component, which, as Brittany mentioned, we've been using some past economic development studies. Alaska Forward was one that really assessed Alaska's economic position, where we were, and how we got there. And so we're assessing background conditions as part of a research component of this process. And then we're engaging in community forums, where we're visiting with industry or we're visiting with community and business leaders around the state, and getting their thoughts on what their economic opportunities are, what their threats are, and how to take advantage of the opportunities best, and how to mitigate what the threats and weaknesses are as best that they can. Also, industry forums. We've conducted a couple of industry forums, and I have a list of all of these coming up. But we've conducted forums, and we'll be setting up a business survey as well to gather information from as many businesses from around the state as we can. As Commissioner Laddick and Director Chione Haywood mentioned, we have a strategy committee that we also receive input from. And I won't make anybody read this or read the whole thing myself, but as outlined by the Economic Development Administration, our strategy committee really represents the diversity of Alaska by regionality and by industry. So there's a well-balanced mix of industry and community leaders that have been providing guidance to this process since we began. The group has been extremely helpful in connecting us to regional and industry resources and contacts to make sure we're getting as much input as possible. They've also been great at sharing our survey around and helping us get on the radio and sharing Facebook posts about our particular effort as well. So almost like a nonprofit board of directors, where you lean on them for contacts in the areas that you're working in. And so this committee has been extremely helpful in that. And for those following along online or otherwise, we are on slide number 6. A list of community forums that we've already completed, and a list that we have yet to complete, but we're working on getting those scheduled, and we'll have those done in the next couple months. We've been working with our partners throughout these areas and these regions, city boroughs, ARDRs, chambers of commerce, and business and community leaders to make sure we're getting the right people in the room and promoting these appropriately. Really, SEDS emerges from a continuing planning process that's developed with broad-based and diverse stakeholder participation, and that's really the point of our outreach in these community forums. A quick direct snapshot of industry input that we've been seeking. We've either conducted a forum with any one of these groups, or we're working with them to assist us in getting our business survey and our desire to collect information from industry out to the public and to businesses in the state.
So looking at kind of the creation and some of the things that are starting to come out of this process.
Brittany, do you mind just mentioning who you are, just for those people who might be just listening?
Thanks. Absolutely, sorry. So this is Brittany Cheney Haywood again. In looking at the some of the things that are starting to kind of come out of this process, and I will also mention that we're on slide number 8 as well, so those that are on the online can follow along. So we're really in the formative stages of this process, and we're starting to receive input from the strategic committee as well as other entities, as we've mentioned. And so we've come up with an initial vision and mission statement, and the vision is, you know, we will have a stable and sustainable economy that generates quality jobs, capital investment, and new revenue to benefit the people and businesses of Alaska. With our mission statement, of the purpose of the Northern Opportunity effort is to arrive at a consensus among Alaskans regarding our economic future, which will result in the articulation of priorities and goals for the state economy. And these efforts will promote new investment and economic opportunities that benefit all Alaskans. Again, this is really just kind of a draft. It's subject to change as we work through this process and receive more feedback going forward. So as we mentioned, we did brand the effort to Northern Opportunity, and it was a take off of our already existing brand. So really the kind of jargon of economic development or SEDS isn't technically really useful for having people understand what this is. And so we really wanted to have something, and I think Bill Popp mentioned that they're going to be working on this with theirs as well, in having more of a kind of a cohesive brand or around this. And so we have northernopportunity.com, which we've used for our public survey, which we're going to discuss in a minute. We were also going to be launching a business survey, and that's where we'll link to this for those surveys. We provided updates on this, as well as allowing people to sign up, subscribe to get updates if they want to stay posted throughout this process. So here's our public survey. We received almost 600 responses. It ran from the end of October until last Friday when we closed it. We've closed it so that we can now launch the business survey. We didn't want to have two going simultaneously, and so we're also in the process of that. We'll provide some more details on kind of the results that we've teased out of the public survey in just a minute. But I do want to say that the process was representative of the population. So these are where we got the surveys from throughout the region. And it pretty much reflects, for the most part, our population centers throughout the state. So I'm going to turn it back over to Ethan for some of the details on the results.
Thank you again, Ethan Tyler with the Division of Economic Development, and we are on we're on slide number 12. And so as Brittany, well, so a majority of the questions on this survey were open-ended. We wanted to allow the participants to express their thoughts in their own words and their way of thinking. And if anybody's collected data before, open-ended questions are kind of challenging to crunch data and numbers with. But we're in that process, and so we have a couple of slides that outline some of the things that we've heard, and I'll provide a little bit of context to this, but just keeping in mind that what we've done is kind of teased out of the results that we've received, some word groupings and some, you know, some different category areas of things that we've heard. And I think that this this first one, you know, top reasons for living in Alaska. We ask people, why do you live in Alaska? And nature and environment come in at the top, and I think almost every arter that we've heard from today, as they were talking about, you know, why people choose to live in their communities, I think pretty much everybody mentioned nature and environment. Alaska is a pretty amazing place to live, and so it does draw people, and that sticks with people. Family, and we did hear a lot of responses about, well, my family's here, I grew up here, which actually to me reflects that more people are putting roots down in Alaska than, you know, we always want to compare where we are now to the 80s, but now, you know, we have a lot of people who have a lot of roots here, and so people are drawn here because of family as well. I won't go through all of them, but I think it's a good snapshot. What are our biggest opportunities was one of the other questions that we've asked. So, again, keeping in mind this information was gathered through open-ended questions, but, you know, notably, people have talked a lot about, anecdotally, people have talked a lot about the visitor industry being a bright spot in Alaska's economy. I think that's reflected in what we've seen in these surveys. I'd also note that, you know, you could probably group resource development, mining, oil and gas, and natural gas in a resource extraction category, but those, you know, no big surprises here, those all rising to the top, especially in the front of people's minds. So another question that we've asked is, what would make Alaska a better place to live? I promise it wasn't entirely self-serving to have economic development as the top one there, but I will tell you that that's made up of a number of things centered a lot around economic diversification, business development activities, and the like. So, you know, what we've been hearing from that is people want to see a more diverse economy here in the state. And also, I mean, speaking of, there's a lot of diversity in what people see as what would make Alaska a better place. And to that end, I'm glad that we did leave the questions open-ended so we could get as much of these responses as possible.
So again, this is Brittany Choney Haywood, Director of Division of Economic Development. And so, that was some of the kind of results that we've initially teased out of the public survey. It wasn't, when we captured that data, we did not have all of the responses in, so we will go back. I wouldn't anticipate it changes much, but there is potential for some changes to come out of that. So next up is, as we try and gather as much input and, you know, be as inclusive as possible in this process, we are going to launch a business opportunity, or the Northern Opportunity Business Survey. And so we've been having the industry forums, so there has been some input that we've already been gathering, but this will allow for us to connect with businesses directly and have them provide us with some feedback on this. So, we are, I have to make a correction on the slide because we said we were launching this week. Mm-hmm. This has been an exercise in flexibility. And so that is going to launch next week. So we're making some few minor tweaks from some feedback that we've received from our strategic committee, and we'll be pushing that out next week through the northernopportunity.com. So in this, we're going to be looking for some background information, and then we'll also have a series of questions surrounding business confidence, looking at significant factors and barriers to their businesses, and then also asking about strategies, things that would advance, as they see it, would advance the economy and economic growth in Alaska, and what is needed from their end to either sustain or expand their businesses going forward. So out of kind of all of these different sources where we're getting input, we are starting to tease out some preliminary goal areas. Again, we're kind of in the middle of this process, so some of these could change, but this is where we're headed, at least at this point. This is input that's being received from the surveys we've talked about, community forums, the industry forums, as well as our strategic committee providing us with very critical and valuable feedback. So what we've heard so far is far these overarching goals is finance and investment, and when we're talking about that, some of the main issues have been around expanded use of microfinance and crowdfunding, as well as evaluating the expanded role of state financing entities, promoting Alaska to outside investors, and then also diversifying sources of capital. When we look into business development as our next goal area, we're looking at initiating business retention and expansion to support existing businesses' health. And the state, the Division of Economic Development does have a business retention and expansion program that we've initiated about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then also in the business development, looking at focus, having a focus on rural business development as well. Innovation and entrepreneurship is the next preliminary goal area. And so supporting innovative research within the University of Alaska, developing an intellectual infrastructure, encouraging innovation in renewable energy or energy-related technologies, looking at monetizing Alaska's specific expertise in remote geographic or in remote geographies and climate change, where really we have that expertise, and I think kind of looking at some research and development in that area and then monetizing that would be a great way forward. And then also positioning Alaska for disruptive technologies that we know are going to be coming down the pipeline as well. Enterprise infrastructure, in that we're looking at expanding access to natural resources for development, exploring and encouraging the development of the Arctic, expanded use of public-private partnerships, which has been mentioned numerous times throughout this hearing today, and then promote the continued development of broadband throughout Alaska. And workforce development is really key, and it goes hand in hand with economic development as well as community development, as Bill Popp mentioned. But building and strengthening those partnerships between economic development organizations, workforce organizations, and the private sector, as well as supporting industry and sector strategies for workforce development. So those are some of the things that we're starting to hear. Again, all very preliminary, and we'll see how things shake out as we move through this process. So what's next? We're looking at completing our information gathering and our public engagements. When we have wrapped that up, we will be working on the draft document with our strategic committee input. We will then go take that draft document out to public comment. Once we have the public comments and we get those incorporated, we'll be finalizing the strategy, and then a lot of the real work's going to start as we move into the implementation phases of this. This process does have yearly updates on the implementation and review for economic conditions that are changing and other things to see where we stand. There is also a large and formal 5-year review of this process as well. So beyond that, we'll be looking at, you know, this process really has to have a serious commitment for measurable economic progress and the growing need for integrated planning and statewide coordination. And I believe Commissioner Laddick has a few last remarks on how we're going to take this strategy moving forward.
Thank you. For the record, Commissioner Laddick again. When you start down the road with an initiative like this, you like to start with the lessons from history. So as you may know, I had Brittany look into this. The last 10 years, what had been the economic development initiatives that were started, and let's hear what happened with them, were they successful, et cetera. There's been no less than four initiatives in the last 4 years, none of which got to the implementation plan. And I believe even the legislature had 2 years of a commission, an economic development commission. Was that 2010 to 2012, somewhere around that time frame? So really the crux of this is we're going to get to the end and have a SEDS in our hands, and then you need to figure out governance and structure. What is the P3, what does public-private partnership look like? We have to gauge the private enterprise's willingness to be involved in this. We're looking at planning an economic development summit where you invite the CEOs from every industry in the state to talk about what are we going to do. When do we talk about economic development in the state of Alaska? When the price of oil goes down. When does that go away? The day the price of oil goes back up. We're in a different environment now. I read the other day that the lower 48 rig count is now up to above what it was at in 2008. So they're drilling for oil again in the lower 48, which may keep the price of oil from going high. But at any rate, I think that we need to get the ball in the end zone, and I do believe that the governance of this should be, for the most part, outside of state government. Because every new administration comes in and there's a pressure or whatever to go, we know how to do this and we'll do it right. So I believe that you need to build this from the bottom up. You have to have industry and private enterprise involved in the process. And we're talking about a decade, if not longer, is what you really need to do to see results. So with that, I'll be finished.
Well, thank you very much for coming before us and giving us an update on what your progress has been so far. And certainly you've touched upon what the focus of this committee is. And, I think that, and I don't want to speak for past legislatures, but I do think we've failed to diversify our economy. And you're right that sometimes you end up turning to something when it's a time of real need, and it's something that we've looked at. Personally, I've introduced legislation, and we passed it last year, the equity crowd investing, and I'm not sure Alaskans are that familiar with it yet, but it ties into the concept that economic growth happens at a local level by growing businesses and tapping into the expertise that already exists within your state. And, that's really where we're so wealthy. I mean, we have such talented people, and you were here when Leilani Shivens spoke about her 10-year-old son winning a cooking contest. I mean, that is really where our future is. And so I applaud the work you're doing. I want to thank Senator Hughes for her work in supporting the ARDRs, which are the Regional Economic Development Organizations. And I can tell you, from my standpoint, you have the full commitment of this committee to look into how we move forward, what the state can do. I agree with your philosophical approach that oftentimes government's best role is to not be trying to direct or pick winners and losers. But I also think that, and we saw from the Southeast Conference report that federal government overreach has been a problem. We certainly are hoping that will improve. And so I look forward to continuing discussion with the department and think that the work that you're doing is very exciting. And with that, I want to ask committee members, do you have any no questions? Okay, great. So next week we will be hearing a piece of legislation that I introduced that would allow for Uber to exist in Alaska. And for those of you listening online, we'll be posting the committee schedule on our Facebook page. And with that, thank you very much.